For those who don't know my story, when I was 12 years old, I was diagnosed with Tourette's and I was on medication for almost 10 years. When I was 21, I learned something called The Secret and I came off the medication overnight against everyone telling me to stay on it, and I had a spiritual awakening. I meditated for 3 weeks straight and my Tourette's disappeared, and I created the podcast to simply preach about everything that most people have in their head but no one ever speaks about, which is what the twitching was. It was too many thoughts inside my head, and now I have a platform where I can speak to people and they can get out what's in their head. So if I could ask and ask a favour from all my listeners, upon looking at my stats recently, it has occurred that out of a very humbling 730,000 downloads since I created the podcast back in 2019, that only 10% of you that listen have actually followed and subscribed to the podcast. If I could ask a massive favour from you all that listen, if you wouldn't mind just hitting that follow and subscribe button, it would mean more than you can imagine, and it really does help the show grow and help reach more people in more ways than you and I can even imagine. The bigger the podcast gets, the bigger the guests get. And my aim is to grow the show big enough that I can reach out to amazing people like Russell Brand, Joe Dispenza, Lewis Howes, Grant Cardone, Joe Rogan, and have deep, intimate and vulnerable one-to-one conversations with them. I want to speak to the human side of people to show we are all the same when you get to the core, regardless of how much money or fame you have.
I've got to sit here eating this stupid food with you and don't really like you, and I tell you don't like me. So anger, resentment, rather than just flowing.
Yeah, it's funny. And it all goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier in service, right? I think unique to the relationship discussion, I think a lot of the challenge that people face is they're looking for a relationship and they're treating it like a thing. Like, I want this. I want you to be this thing for me. Like, this is the kind of toy I want to have. And if you're not exactly what I want, then move on to the next, without understanding that they virtually have the same perspective as you. Oh, well, energetically, they do have the same perspective as you. So they're looking at you through that same lens because that's how you are. But like you just said, when you flow, right, when you just let go, you just be yourself, be your truest self, and detach from whoever you meet and date, like understanding, hey, this could work out, this could not work out. Everything I do is like a lesson and a teachable moment and an opportunity for me to grow and become better. When you have that perspective and you end up in a relationship, that's why I'm super grateful for the relationship that I'm in, and I hope that it never ends, because I grow exponentially because of her. I think she's infinitely smarter than me, better than me, sharper than me. Like, in every way, I look up to her. But I'm still me. I still present me, the best version of me. And I believe that that's what continues the cycle going. All of my relationships beforehand were very much like, what am I getting out of this relationship? If that's what you're looking for, I would challenge that you're probably not actually ready for a relationship.
Yeah, it's beautiful because, you know, my first relationship, she wanted me to become the version that she wanted in this boyfriend that she had in her head her whole life. Did all the stuff that she wanted. Like just a checklist, like morning messages and whatever. And so you think, okay, fine, I can do that, you know. And then you realise she's literally moulding me to become this person that she wanted, and I'm losing myself, okay? Mm-hmm. And so to cut a long story short, the person I'm seeing now, I can be exactly who I am, me, 100% of the time, all the time, and that she loves it. And by me being me, she is evolving herself. So I don't have to do anything. I just have to show up and be me. And you see the person you want to be. You take the things that you like about what I'm doing. You put them into yourself. You evolve. That's how it should be. You two people together, they exchange their service. If you want a plumber and he's an electrician, accept him as he unblocks your pipes and accept how he does his electrics. Don't try and tell him do it this way or that way. You're a plumber, stick to unblocking pipes, mate. So you know, when you've had the best of both and you really can compare, it's almost like, why did I not know this before? And especially when you did know it before, as in the wisdom side to it, but you still didn't, you allowed it to happen. So just showing up as you, letting them show up as them, take the best from each other, don't try and change each other.
The other person will see the change they need to change in themselves when they see you, because they'll see flaws in you that they'll see in themselves. They wouldn't see them otherwise, and they'll change if they feel the need to. They'll also see the things that they want to become in themselves in you, and they'll change on their own accord. You don't even have to tell them. It's like, if you don't drink and you don't smoke and you meditate all the time and you're happy, they'll see that and they'll think, well, I'm unhappy. Why am I unhappy? I drink, I smoke, and I don't meditate. They'll naturally want to do it. You don't have to tell them. And you certainly shouldn't have to change them. You should show up how you are, take it or leave it. Is there room for compromise in a man-made world of written rules and how to do things? There will be compromise every now and then, like, you know, going out for dinner. I want Chinese, you want Indian, right? That's fine. You know, this toothpaste or that toothpaste. Okay, well, if you don't want to get your own and then we're going to share, then I guess we'll have to have the minty one, right? But compromising who you are as a person and your morals, you should never do. You should never do, because you're changing who you are.
Yeah.
You weren't that person before you met them, and you will go back to that old person if you were to leave them. So why would you be changing in the present moment with them? You shouldn't.
Right. Yeah, I think the short answer to that is there's a people pleaser in all of us, and you, especially when you care for someone, like, you just want to make them happy. And a lot of times I don't believe it's a conscious decision or response. I think it's either a conditioned response or a subconscious programming that, like, we, especially, I want to say, especially guys, we're really bad at this inherently. I don't know if it's genetic or what, but we typically fall into that category more often than not, where we start changing ourselves or we start doing things because ultimately what we're trying to do is serve. We're trying to please our mate because it makes us happy when they're happy. And what we fail to realize is what you just pointed out. The thing that's going to make somebody happy is you being the best version of you. If you keep continuing to change, you're never going to make them happy, because as soon as you make them happy, then they find something else that they want, and or either about you to change or something they want you to do. It's just this never-ending cycle until finally someone cracks, when it's just so much easier. You just be yourself. Just you be the perfect, truest version of you, and you will attract what you are. If you find that you're attracting things that you don't like, that is a very clear sign that it's time for you to raise your level of awareness, reflect, and check out the things about yourself that you don't like or that you want to change. Because our exterior environment is literally a reflection of us. Like, if my house is really clean, but I've got one room that's really, really messy, there's something dark inside of me that I'm not taking care of.
What's in that room, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. What's going on in there?
Under the carpet.
But we all have that, right? I mean, it's so interesting when the first time you go through an experience like that, where you have that revelation, you're like, you know what? My circumstances suck. Like, I've lived in apartment my whole life in a seedy neighborhood that's not safe, and I don't feel safe. Okay, why? Like, when you get to this point and you begin to understand that everything is a reflection of you, and you know that I can affect and I can change my exterior environment by addressing whatever's going on inside with me, the first time you do that, you feel like it's all done. I'm about to become a gajillionaire and have this massive, awesome house and my favorite car and the greatest mate and whatever. Like, because it's such an empowering feeling. All I can tell you really is, in my own experience, I feel like whatever, no matter what you overcome and how great it is, overcoming something about yourself or changing an aspect of you for the better just peels off the top layer. Once that thing, whatever it is, has been resolved, you are now able to see the next thing. And I think for most of us, there will probably always be something to continue on and improving in our own lives. So that analogy of, like, maybe I do dig out, you know, and finally clean that room, but you know what? After that room is cleaned and the whole house is spick and span, I realize, well, I have a closet. that's also really, really rank and needs to be addressed. And then if I uncork that one and resolve whatever that thing is about me, I might discover, I don't really pay any attention to the garage either. It's quite a mess. Like it's always something. It could be the yard, it could be the car, it could be whatever. But I feel like it's an ongoing journey, but once you've started that journey and once you've had especially your first real, oh my God, like I've just overcome this thing and I've changed my own life, everything else becomes a whole lot less of a negative impact on us. When we experience that kind of thing and we have that experience of having made a positive change, we now have that awareness of like, I don't have to tolerate this. Like, I don't have to live this way. I don't have to be sad or depressed or miserable or anxious or whatever it is. I don't have to live in fear. There's all these things I don't have to do because I've already experienced what it's like to overcome. And I know that I can do it again.
So it's like a young man who, whenever he goes out and meets women, he always is attracted to women that stink of BO. And all of his mates say to him, "Why do you always attract women that stink of BO?" And he doesn't know. He doesn't know. And then one day, his mates go round to his parents' house for a barbecue. And then the mum comes up to the friends and greets all the friends. And his friends say, "Fucking hell, your mother stinks of BO." And he goes, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "She stinks. She hugged me, and now my arm, my fucking neck stinks of, stinks of curry, right?" And then he goes, "Yeah, but she's always smelled like that." And then it clicks to the friends. He's been attracting women that smell BO because that's what his mother has always smelled like. That's her smell. That's the motherly scent. So we go with our parents and their traits and their smells and their pheromones and stuff like that. And that's why he's been attracting women you stink of BO. So in terms of your dark closet, there's obviously a part of you somewhere that has an objection to clearing the cupboard out or going in the garage for whatever reason. There could be old photos in there you don't want to dig up or whatever.
Yep.
Everything that we do is a glimpse of ourself somewhere along the line. And all of a sudden, that guy, and I'm just making this story up on the spot, by the way, all of a sudden that the mother, there's the son of the mother, becomes aware of that his mum thinks of BO, and he accepts that as just her natural pheromone. He stops dating women who smell a BO because now he's aware. He wasn't aware before, but now he's aware. He wasn't aware that he was attracting what he's accepted as normal his whole life. Questioning everything, such as, why am I putting off cleaning the garage out? What's in the garage? What did I put in the garage 20 years ago in that box? Like, what is in there? And everything goes back to like a storage compartment in the individual's brain. There's something in there that you could say is running or avoiding, and it all comes back to reflection of oneself. Always say half doing a task because if you complete it means you might have to give yourself some credit. And let's say a parent didn't give credit growing up, you kind of feel that credit that you never have. So it might make you feel that feeling that you never had growing up, and it might feel weird because you're not used to it, even though you craved it. So there's so many deep factors and elements to why we just accept what we accept. And if you go back into the brain, there's always a absolutely definite, clear reason why. Even though you might not know why, because that's all you've known. Like growing up in a unsafe neighborhood, you'd be happily living, grow up with kids in a you'd happily create a family in an unsafe neighborhood because you're used to the survival techniques of surviving. You're used to double locking your car, looking in your window mirror every 5 minutes, kind of just keeping your eyes focused. Somebody walk past you, and it's only when you move to a neighborhood that you realize how nice it is to look at people and smile and say hello. And leave your door open and have the neighbors come in with some jam or some shit that you realize, wow, I've missed out on this amazing life because I accepted my old life was just what it was.
Yeah, I can actually. So listening to you share all that, it brought up a bunch of stuff. I can give you real world examples in my life that I've gone through. If that's okay, like if you want to hear and you think that
Absolutely.
the but the listeners would take value from my experience. So I've wow. I'll start with this. So I'll say with what you just shared, that thing, that interpretation, like I love your BO example, by the way. I really love that.
Just made it up.
So ultimately what that is a representation of that person's interpretation of love. And ultimately that's what we're seeking, right? We want to be loved. And so, yes, that interpretation of like, my interpretation of love is someone who smells really bad is giving me the attention that I want. So I'm seeking, like, not consciously, like you just explained, not consciously, but I somehow subconsciously, I'm seeking people that smell really bad because subconsciously, that's how I interpret love. And like you said, until you become aware, oh, this is why. And then it's decision time. Like, you can decide that you're okay with that and continue the journey, or you can decide, you know what, that it's time for some reprogramming. So I did not know. So there's two experiences that I want to share with you. One is the one that I believed developed me into, I'm going to claim, being a former perfectionist. and I believe that what that came from now. So please don't think that my entire life I was aware of this. I was not aware of this until probably my 40s, which I'm in now. So when I was a kid growing up, we moved around a lot. So my childhood was single mother, not the kindest time to women, and very difficult. She wasn't around much. And, you know, like I said, we couldn't really sustain ourselves. So we moved around quite a bit. And the school systems and the kids that I grew up around, for whatever reason, it was very important not to be stupid. And kids would ridicule you. So it was a very, like, there was a tremendous amount of pressure on me as a child to perform well scholastically, which as I got older, did not do. and it was ultimately like this fear-based thing. I genuinely felt bad. Like, I felt terrible if I got a question wrong, if somebody made fun of me, because I would believe that I was dumb and that was a really terrible thing. And so that gave me this negative motivation, this propensity to be great at something, like just to not be perceived as someone who is stupid. And that developed into a perfectionist style behavior. I ended up in a career in technology, which is like, I mean, it's typically for people who are viewed at as being hyper intelligent. And none of that was conscious for me. So when I mentioned earlier, like my decision to just walk away from all that was because I had gone through an exercise, an empowerment exercise, to sort of dive deep into my own psyche and start uncovering what has gone on, what has created this version of me, and is there something about it that I want to part ways with? And that was an extremely difficult decision to make, not for the obvious reasons, right? Obviously, like, why would you walk away from a 21-year career where you're making, you know, around $150,000 a year? Like, people would literally kill to have your job. You have a great job. People respect you. You like your boss. You like your coworkers. Like, literally everything people write down that what they want to have is what I had. But I wasn't happy. And I didn't know why. So when I went on this journey and I decided to walk away, it wasn't all those obvious things. I could just tell, like, you know, there was some dirty closet, right? There was something I had to figure out and clean out because I just wasn't happy. And all these things that people think are going to make them happy, I literally lived through the experience of proof of they don't make you happy. I will acknowledge there's a lot of upside, right? It's great having money. It's great having a home and owning a car. There's a lot of things that you don't have to worry about. But those things, I'll pause for a moment and just share briefly. There's a thing called Maslow's Law that everybody should get familiar with. And if you look at society, I think as a whole, but I could definitely speak for, for how society has been created in the United States. It's designed in such a way that people are on this perpetual cycle that Maslow's laws are, those needs are not satisfied. The whole concept of living check to check means that my focus is food, shelter, clothing. By the way, for those of you who are not familiar with Maslow's law, that's what it is, right? But our chief concerns for survival are food, shelter, and clothing. And if you think about the design of society, what is it that we are actually working for? Food, shelter, clothing. And if we are in a cycle where we can't take a break from that, we can't quit our job and go on a sabbatical, we can't take 2 weeks off, we can't take a month off because we genuinely need to decompress. We can't do that because if we stop working, we don't have any money. If we don't have any money, they're going to take my house away. It's not being satisfied. So being aware of that and walking away from a career was exponential. There was an incredible amount of fear for me, which was a huge exercise, right? A life lesson in actually taking that step and following through with it. Because that was now 3-4 years ago. And I've still not had a job that whole time. Simply because, you know, choosing to go on somewhat of an entrepreneurial journey. But on this journey, I discovered, going back to your BO reference, I did not realize that subconsciously I believed I was not lovable. I went through an exercise with, I would say, maybe a group of about 12 people. And I honestly don't remember what I was writing down, but we were, I want to say it was almost like a pseudo hypnotherapy thing. We were in a bit of a trance state to get us to sort of unlock, dive into our unconscious, and just let the words flow, right? Write down this specific exercise. And I started writing and I started to feel this immense pain, like my heart started to ache and I was just losing control completely. And I stopped. And we were all sitting outside and I went in the house because the facilitator was in the house giving us all space. And I remember she's like, what are you doing? Like, why are you in here? You should be out there doing your thing. And I was like, I think something's wrong. I'm doing it wrong. Like, I'm about to come unglued. Something is happening that's really bad. Like, I really don't feel. And then she stopped me and she was like, do you trust me? And I said, yes. And she was like, go finish the exercise, no matter what it takes. I can't believe I'm kind of tearing up right now. And I went out and I said, I finished and I cried like a fucking baby in front of 12 strangers. And I mean the disgusting cry, the embarrassing cry. Water was, yeah. Water and snot were all over my paper. Yes.
And best cry.
It was, you're right. It is the most cleansing kind of cry. But it was a release, yeah. Is really what it was. So there was this massive release.
Yeah.
And through that exercise, I discovered that's what it was, that I truly believed that I was unlovable and that I would find ways, my subconscious was finding ways to sabotage my relationships, to make them fail, to prove that I was not lovable. And I can tell you that for sure because I've been divorced twice. I've had some colossal failed endings to relationships, you know, before getting, like, cleaning my own closet out, right? And then that took me forward to something that actually that Christina does now. Like, because we both had this experience individually, she really latched onto this passionately, saying, like, this is what I want to do for a living because it genuinely helps people and changes people. I went through an exercise. It's an 8-hour session. It's actually called mental and emotional release. It's an actual registered trademarky thing. And in that experience, I discovered the reason why I felt that way. More importantly, I was able to go back in time in that moment and reprogram my perspective, my level of understanding, to remove that from my psyche. And it was this moment. I was 2 years old And my father, at the time, was probably one of the last times I ever saw him, because my father was absent for the whole of my life. I barely know him. My father and his friend Rudy, sitting in a living room on a plaid couch, and they were burning me with cigarettes. And after I had that experience, and the guy facilitating it helped me go in and reprogram that memory so that it no longer had that impact on me. I remember I called my mother and I said, "Mom, who the fuck is Rudy?"
Oh, fucking hell. Fuck's sake. Jesus, fuck.
She was like, "What?" And I said, "My dad's friend
Rudy
Rudy."
Giuliani?
Yeah.
He's
I
a
was like,
liar.
"My dad." I said, "My dad's friend Rudy."